Building a server-side FFmpeg compositor with scratch quotas. How VibeChopper renders timelines with a server-side FFmpeg compositor while bounding concurrency, scratch storage, object paths, cleanup, and export progress. Why server-side compositing exists. VibeChopper is browser-first, where that makes the editing experience fast. Users can upload footage, inspect frames, browse transcripts, and describe timeline changes without treating the browser as a dumb remote control. But a final export has a different job than a preview. It must produce a stable video file, apply timeline semantics consistently, land in durable object storage, and leave enough metadata for the editor, AI edit run, media panel, and repair systems to agree on what happened. Why server-side compositing exists. The compositor accepts a user ID, project ID, export ID, target format, resolution, FPS, and progress callback. It loads the project-owned timeline state, downloads the source material into a temporary render workspace, builds a filter graph, encodes through FFmpeg, streams the output to object storage, and returns the storage path, file size, and duration. The public product action is simple: render a timeline. The backend contract is deliberately specific. Why server-side compositing exists. The hard part is not only FFmpeg syntax. The hard part is making FFmpeg behave like a production subsystem inside an auto-scaled app. Renders can be large, source files can be large, generated audio and overlays can arrive from different product paths, users can trigger multiple exports, temporary files can fill disk, a happy path demo can ignore all of that. A product cannot. Why server-side compositing exists. VibeChopper handles that by putting controls around the compositor. Render concurrency is bounded in process. Each export receives its own scratch directory. Scratch usage is checked after source downloads, overlay downloads, and encodings. Output is streamed from disk to object storage instead of being read into one giant buffer. The scratch directory is removed in a finally block, whether the render succeeds or fails. These choices are not glamorous, but they are what keep cloud rendering from turning into file system clutter. The render lifecycle. The first operation in the compositor is not FFmpeg. It is admission control. Render concurrency defines how many renders can run at once in the current process, with a conservative default of 1. Acquire render slot increments an in-flight counter, or queues the job until a slot is released. The release function runs in render project's finally path, so a failed render does not permanently consume capacity. The render lifecycle. That limiter is intentionally small. FFmpeg is CPU-heavy, memory-hungry, and very good at exposing weak assumptions about shared infrastructure. A web app can serve many lightweight requests at once, but export work should be treated more like a job. In-process concurrency is not a global distributed scheduler, and it does not pretend to be one. It is still an important local safety rail for a replet-style runtime, or any node process that can receive a burst of render requests. The render lifecycle. Once admitted, the compositor creates a scratch directory using render scratchdir or the operating system temp directory. The directory name includes the export ID, which makes logs and local inspection easier while keeping each render isolated. The project state is then loaded in parallel. Clips, videos, transitions, overlays, tracks, and motion keyframes. Clip effects are loaded per clip, with defensive fallback to an empty effect list if one lookup fails. The render lifecycle.
From there, the lifecycle moves through named stages: loading project, downloading sources, downloading overlays, building graph, encoding, uploading, and complete. Those stage names matter because long-running media work needs visible progress. A percent without a stage can still feel frozen. A stage gives the product a way to tell the user whether the render is gathering media, building the graph, encoding frames, or moving the finished file into storage. Scratch quotas are a product boundary. The scratch directory is a working area, not a storage product. That distinction is easy to lose when the first render works. Source files are downloaded there, overlay images are downloaded there, FFmpeg writes its output there. If the system never measures that directory, a few large jobs can quietly turn temporary space into the failure mode for the whole app. Scratch quotas are a product boundary. VibeChopper's compositor has a simple quota model. Render scratch max bytes controls the maximum allowed scratch usage, and the default is 20 gigabytes. Get directory size bytes walks the render directory recursively and counts file sizes. Assert render scratch within quota compares current usage against the configured ceiling and throws when the render workspace exceeds it. The check runs after source downloads, after overlay downloads, and after encoding. Scratch quotas are a product boundary. Those checkpoints are placed where growth happens. Source downloads can dominate scratch size before FFmpeg even starts. Overlay downloads are usually smaller, but they still count, especially when generated assets become part of richer timelines.
Encoding can produce a large output file. Checking only at the end would detect the problem after the expensive work already ran. Checking at each boundary gives the pipeline earlier, clearer failure points. Scratch quotas are a product boundary. A quota error is not a moral judgment on the user's project. It is an operational boundary. The product can tell the user to try a shorter timeline, lower resolution, or fewer simultaneous renders. The server can preserve its own ability to keep working. The media panel can still show durable assets because final outputs belong in object storage, not in the Scratch directory. That is the healthy relationship between temporary storage and product storage. Sources stay project-owned. The compositor does not accept arbitrary URLs and ask FFmpeg to fetch them. It loads videos and generated audio through server storage and object storage services using the authenticated user and project IDs. For each source-backed clip, it finds the matching project video record, normalizes the object path, downloads the media to Scratch, probes metadata when possible, and records whether the source has audio, video, or both. Sources stay project-owned. That source model matters for two reasons. First, authorization stays on the server. The render path sees the same user-scoped project data model as the rest of the app. Second, media type behavior becomes explicit. A normal video clip can contribute video and audio. A generated music or voiceover asset may be audio only. An image clip should not try to produce audio. These distinctions become inputs to the graph builder instead of guesses buried in ffmpegs.error. Sources stay project-owned. Overlay downloads use an additional safety rule. Replic object store paths, GS:References, or URLs that include /objects. Non-object storage overlay URLs are refused. That protects the renderer from becoming a server-side request tool against arbitrary addresses. In a creative product, users should be able to generate and place visual assets, but the render process should still know where those assets are allowed to come from. Sources stay project-owned.
After all sources and overlays are downloaded, the compositor checks the Scratch quota again. That is the moment when the render has gathered the raw ingredients but has not yet spent CPU building the final video. If the workspace is already too large, stopping there is the correct behavior. Timeline semantics become a filter graph. The core compositor job is translating VibeChopper timeline semantics into FFmpeg filters. A clip is not just an input file. It has source start and endpoints, timeline start and endpoints, speed, reverse state, fades, audio volume, mute state, track assignment, optional speed ramp behavior, optional clip effects, and sometimes motion keyframes. The compositor turns that data into trim, set peps, scale, pad, fade, reverse, color, audio, and timing filters. Timeline semantics become a filter graph. Clip effects are bounded before they reach the graph. Color correction clamps exposure, brightness, contrast, saturation, temperature, tint, highlights, and shadows into controlled ranges. LUT style effects map to adjustment filters. Blur, sharpen, vignette, and film grain become explicit FFmpeg filters. TS cover those mappings and confirm that disabled effects do not leak into the graph. Timeline semantics become a filter graph. Speed deserves special care. Constant speed changes use video set peps and audio tempo, or sample rate retiming. Speed ramps are converted into source and target segments, then concatenated back into one clip stream. Audio can follow the ramp, preserve pitch through a tempo, retime through sample rate filters, or be muted for the ramp when the timeline asks for that. This is the kind of behavior that makes a server compositor feel like an editor instead of a file converter. Timeline semantics become a filter graph. The graph then composes clips onto a canvas. When the timeline is simple, the compositor can use a concat path. When the timeline includes overlays, transitions, keyframes, gaps, or layered tracks, it creates a black base canvas and overlays position clip streams into their timeline ranges. Motion keyframes can drive X, Y, scale, rotation, and opacity expressions. Transitions such as fade, dissolve, slide, wipe, and push become alpha or animated overlay behavior. Adjustment tracks apply LUT and color filters globally or across adjustment clip ranges. Audio is a real track. A video compositor that treats audio as an afterthought creates user-visible drift. VibeChopper's render graph builds audio alongside video. Clip local audio is trimmed to the same source range, retimed when speed changes, faded in or out, volume adjusted, and delayed to its timeline start. Track volume applies after the clip delay. Audible streams are mixed with AMIX, padded, trimmed to the total timeline duration, and reset to a clean timestamp base. Audio is a real track. Track state also matters. Muted tracks are silent. Soloed tracks mute non-soloed tracks. Audio-only tracks do not render video. When the timeline includes explicit audio clips, normal video clips are gated, so the explicit audio arrangement can define the mix. That behavior keeps generated music, voiceovers, and dialogue edits from fighting each other during export. Audio is a real track. There is an environment escape hatch, render disable audio equals 1, that sends existing clip audio labels to a null sync and skips the mix. That is useful operationally, but the main product path treats audio as first-class timeline data. Creators do not think in separate media pipelines when they hit export. They expect the rendered result to respect the edit they built. The output handoff. After the filter graph is assembled, the compositor writes one local output file inside the Scratch directory.
264 with libx264. AAC Audio when audio exists, UV420p, a very fast preset, and plus fast start for MP4. WebM uses VP9 in Opus. Progress is read from FFmpeg's dash progress pipe 1 output, converting outtime milliseconds into an encoding percentage that occupies the middle of the render progress range. The output handoff. When FFmpegs exit successfully, the compositor verifies that the output path exists and stats the file. The extension is chosen from the output format, and upload progress fills the final stretch of the progress bar. The output handoff. Streaming is important. The server should not read the entire rendered video into memory just to upload it. Disk is already the staging medium for FFmpeg output, so the upload path uses the file at that path and reports bytes as they move. The return render result contains the durable storage path, file size, and duration. That result can feed export records, render verification, AI edit run artifacts, and media graph displays. The output handoff. This is also where Scratch discipline pays off. The output file lives locally only long enough to be uploaded. The durable product artifact lives in object storage. The editor should link to that stable artifact, not to a temporary path that may vanish after cleanup or process restart. Progress and failure are part of the API. Long-running render work needs more than a promise that eventually resolves. The progress callback gives the rest of 5Chopper a stage and percentage that can be written to an export record, shown in the UI, or attached to an AI edit run. Early stages reserve room for setup. Encoding reports frame time progress, uploading reports byte progress, completion is explicit. Progress and failure are part of the API. Failure gets the same respect. Missing clips, missing source media, absent renderable clips, FFmpeg exits, quota failures, and upload failures all stop the render instead of producing a fake success. The compositor keeps the tail of FFmpeg stand error, which is enough to diagnose many PRAF or codec failures without letting logs grow without bound. Higher-level render verification can then turn missing storage path, zero file size, missing duration, or sanitized quota errors into user-facing blockers. Progress and failure are part of the ATI. The finally cleanup path matters here. A failed FFmpeg command still removes the scratch directory. A failed upload still removes the scratch directory. A quota exception still removes the scratch directory. The release function for the render slot also runs after failure. That is the difference between an error that affects one export and an error that poisons the next render. Progress and failure are part of the API. In an AI-assisted editor, this clarity is even more important. An AI edit run may trigger a render after planning and tool execution. If export fails, the run should show where it failed, not leave the user guessing whether the model, the timeline, FFmpeg, object storage, or scratch disk was responsible. Stage-based progress and structured render results give that workflow a backbone. What developer should copy? If you are building a cloud video renderer, copy the boundaries before you copy the filter strings. Put admission control in front of FFmpeg. Give every export an isolated scratch directory. Make scratch storage configurable. Measure it after every stage that can grow it. Delete it in a finally Glock. Stream the finished file to durable storage. Return a small, concrete result instead of asking callers to parse logs. What developer should copy? Also keep source authorization close to the render path. Do not let the compositor fetch arbitrary user-provided URLs. Resolve source media through your own project records and storage service.
Treat generated audio, overlays, voiceovers, source clips, image clips, adjustment tracks, and effects as timeline data with explicit behavior. The renderer should be expressive, but it should not be vague. What developer should copy? Finally, test the graph builders where they can be tested cheaply. VibeChopper exposes compositor test hooks for render object paths, clip effect filters, adjustment filters, clip filters, equivalent clip collapsing, and render equivalence keys. Those tests do not replace full render tests, but they catch a lot of contract drift before a user waits through an export. The result. The server-side compositor lets VibeChopper keep the editor fast while still producing product-grade exports. The browser can remain the creative surface. The server can own the final render boundary. FFmpeg can do the heavy media work, but it runs inside a shape that understands users, projects, storage, progress, quotas, cleanup, and provenance. The result. That shape is the real lesson. A compositor is not just a command string. It is admission control, source loading, graph construction, scratch accounting, progress reporting, output upload, cleanup, and a typed handoff to verification and media systems. When those pieces are present, cloud rendering stops feeling like a risky side quest and starts behaving like part of the editor. The result. For VibeChopper, the user-facing promise stays direct. Describe the edit, apply the effects, render the timeline, and keep moving. Under the surface, the platform is making sure the temporary work stays temporary, and the final video becomes a durable artifact with a trail.